We are talking about some of this year's best children's books on The Larry Mueller Show today. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Kathleen Horning. She is the director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center. It's a library of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she has some great book suggestions for children of all ages. And I'm one of those because I'm so excited. We have so many wonderful books all around me, so I'm very happy. Thanks for coming in today, Katie.
I'm happy to.
Now, if you have you're looking for a good book for a kid on your gift list, or maybe you have a suggestion for somebody of a book that you purchased for a younger person, give us a call. Our number, 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Katie, before we even go any further, you need to tell us what the Cooperative Children's Book Center is.
Certainly. The Cooperative Children's Book Center has that sort of unwieldy name.
Yes,
we
it does.
We call it by its acronym, CCBC. And what the Cooperative Children's Book Center is, it's a library of the School of Education, and it's also funded in part by the Department of Public Instruction. And we are a state resource, so not just for people at UW or in Madison, but the entire state of Wisconsin. And our librarians frequently travel around the state doing outreach visits. We take copies of books with us so people can see them firsthand, because we always say that there's no substitute for seeing a book firsthand.
Very,
you can
very
hear
true.
About it,
mm-hmm.
You can read a review about it, but if you can actually see it.
Yeah.
And the people we serve are teachers and librarians who work with youth. So even though the CCBC is a wonderful collection of books for children and teens, we don't serve children and teens directly. We serve the people who do work directly with them, helping them find the best books for their classrooms and libraries.
Do you also help them then with like continuing education, that type of thing?
We do. We do some workshops about subjects such as book evaluation and how to find the best books on particular topics. Right now, diversity is a topic that a lot of teachers and librarians would like workshops, continuing education about, learning how to evaluate the best books, how to select them, and really how it's really nice for us, because it gives us a chance to network with the teachers and librarians and find out exactly what their needs are and what sorts of things they're having trouble finding on their own. Oftentimes we can give them suggestions of books or suggestions of places to look. But it also helps us as we do our work, because then when we do see a book come in on a particular topic that we've heard teachers or librarians ask for, we can say, we know that there is a librarian in Eau Claire, for example, who is going to be very excited about this
mm-hmm,
book.
Definitely. And, it's a great service, because obviously our libraries are so important for our kids, well, adults too, but mm-hmm. it's certainly a great place to get kids interested in reading. So,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, was it a good year for children's books?
It really was.
Yeah.
There are, at the CCBC, we get pretty much everything published for children and teens every year. And that's we usually get about 3,500 books
wow.
a year. And we do handle each of the books. We catalog them and put them on our shelves. That's unlike a lot of other libraries that are selective about what they put on, because we really want people to be able to make their own decisions. We're just providing access to them. And we also evaluate the books as they come in. And we make observations, because we're getting everything. We can make observations about what sorts of trends we're seeing in books for children and teens, the impact of other popular books. For example, back in the 90s, there was something we called the Harry Potter effect.
I knew you were going to
Everybody
bring that up.
Everybody wanted to publish the next book like Harry Potter. So
sure,
there
sure.
were so many imitators.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them got to be quite funny. We saw so many books that had three children on the cover, and one of them would always have glasses.
Of course.
And we even had a retelling of Rumpelstiltskin where the prince was wearing glasses.
Oh, my goodness.
And he looked just like Harry Potter.
Are those the kind of books that are usually recommended, or are they not quite up to your standards?
Well, sometimes. Sometimes they are. Mm-hmm. You know, imitation always, or success breeds imitation.
Right.
And and then, you know, there's always the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just interesting to see the books that are being put out to try to get that same kind of success. Or, you know, after someone has read a popular book 10 times, they might want something similar to that.
Oh, sure. I think we're all guilty of that. So speaking of trends, what have you seen, you know, after the Harry Potter? What's been going on the last few years?
The last few years, we've seen a lot of children's fantasy. I mean, that you could say is in part inspired by Harry Potter.
Sure.
Then we saw a lot of dystopic fiction for older children and teens, and that's sort of petering out a bit. Lately, I would say that we are seeing a renaissance of books for middle grade readers, and those are children from about third grade through sixth or seventh grade, which is really nice. I mm-hmm. love middle grade fiction myself.
Do you?
And then there are certain themes that we see. For example, one theme we've seen quite a bit of this year are books about kindness and how children can be kind to other people.
Wonderful trend.
Yes.
Not going to hurt anybody at all, that's for sure. Well, you did, you know, send us a list of, mm-hmm. of some books that you thought would be the top. Are these, besides the kindness, are there things that these books have in common?
Well, I think that what these books all have in common is they're all really great books that I can recommend. And with the picture books, what we look for are books that have really great pictures, of course, but we also look for books that have really outstanding writing. We know that picture books are likely to be read over and over and over again, and we like it to be something that an adult reading aloud to a child wants to read over and over again. You might get tired after you've read, you know, Goodnight Moon for the 10th time in an afternoon. But that type of reading aloud over and over to a young child is really important for brain development, that repetition. And also there's such comfort in stories. And for young children, predictability is a form of comfort.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, you've brought some beautiful ones here. Now, you kind of broke up your list into age groups.
Right.
How do you determine age groups? I mean, you always see on a book, you know, this is for, you know, ages 3 to 6 or whatever. How is that determined?
Well, that's a really good question. A lot of it for us is determined by our own experiences with children. And what kinds of interests they have, what kind of attention spans they have. For older children who are reading independently, typography is really important.
Oh, really?
Yes. I used to work at Madison Public Library, and I became very aware of this, that there could be a book that was right at the interest level and reading level of a particular child, but if the type was too small or too big, the child might be turned off by it. So they're extremely sensitive to the size of type. And a book also has to be readable for a child who is reading independently, whether they've been reading for a couple of years or longer than that, or they're just starting off. So things we look at beyond just the outstanding writing and illustration is we look at the amount of white space on a page. We look at, in books for children who I'd say in about third grade or fourth grade, they're inexperienced readers. So when a story jumps around in time, having things like the next day at the beginning of a paragraph where there's a transition mm-hmm. is really important.
Sure.
If you just leave a line of blank space, like adults know that means it's probably changing in setting or time, children are too inexperienced as readers to have figured that out. So looking just at the kind of words that help children understand where they are in a story. And getting direct feedback from children themselves is always important.
What a great idea.
I think sometimes we really underestimate what they can understand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, well, let's start talking about some of these books. And the first two on your list is a very well-known Wisconsin author. Why don't you tell us about those?
Sure. There are two books this year that are out by Wisconsin author Kevin Hankus, who lives in Madison. And Kevin grew up in Racine and attended UW-Madison as an art student. But he also is a really outstanding writer. So he often writes and illustrates his own picture books. And one of the things that's unusual about Kevin is he writes for from the very youngest children, like 2 and 3 year olds, up through older children, like 13 year olds. So he writes novels for older children. This year, his two picture books, the first one is at the younger age spectrum. It's called A Parade of Elephants.
And you have it in the studio with you. And
I do.
It's so cute.
It is a beautiful book. Mm-hmm. And it is just really the day in the life of 5 elephants who are all different colors. And it's a bit of a concept book. You count the elephants. There are some things like over, under type comparisons. A very, very simple storyline. I've heard from a lot of people who have bought this for a child who is 1 or 2. And it is that kind of book, like I mentioned earlier, that I think an adult will really enjoy reading over and over again. It will hold the attention of the youngest child, but I think also it is just aesthetically really beautiful. And that's one of the things I appreciate about the picture books Kevin Hankus does, is that they are beautiful works of art in addition to being at the level.
Now, he illustrated this himself, is
he
that
did.
Right? Yeah, it's just gorgeous.
Other one I brought that is out this year is written by Kevin, and he's an excellent writer of picture book text.
Mm-hmm.
I've used his books as read-alouds with young children many, many times, and they always hold young children's attention. But this book is called Winter is Here, and it's illustrated by Kevin's wife, Laura Dronzek.
Also very talented.
And she has a completely different style of art from Kevin. And this is a book I thought was especially appropriate for today because it's called Winter is Here.
And sure is.
For young children who are 2, 3, 4 years old, seasons are always a perennial interest. And this is the third book in a series of books Kevin and Laura have done together about the seasons. They've done one about fall, they've done one about spring, and now we have winter. And it's just, a very, very concise text, and Laura's illustrations are just so frosty. They will make you feel cold.
Yes, or cozy, too, because there's like little mittens and everybody's got scarves and hats on.
Yes, yes.
And there's hope at the end because they do go into spring and butterflies.
Well, it is. And one of the things that this book does, as do the other 2 season books by Kevin and Laura, is really show a child interacting in the natural world.
Right, right. We're talking about children's books with Kathleen Horning, the director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center, a library of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. On our on-air producer today is Brianne Chasso, and Dave Potras is our technical director. Do you have a book that you'd like to tell us about? Well, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking about some of this year's outstanding children's books with the director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center, the CCBC, Katie Horning. And again, Katie, thanks so much for putting this together for us because there's a lot of book buying going on this time of year. And let's go right to the phones. We've got Winna calling from Galesville. Hi, Winna.
Hello.
What do you have for us today? Winna? Hello, Winna, are you there? Oh, it looks like we lost her. But she was talking about Secret Sisters of the Sea, I believe. Was
of the Salty Sea.
Okay,
yes.
The Salty Sea.
By Lynn Ray Perkins. And Winna is right up on 2018 books. New book.
A
lot
That's
of times
a new one.
People recommend books from years and years ago
right.
that they enjoyed reading with children and still enjoy today. And that's great because those books have staying power. But it's also really always exciting to find a good new book.
It sure is.
So she's recommending The Secret Sisters of the Salty Sea by Lynn Ray Perkins, which is a novel for, I would say, probably about 4th, 5th, 6th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about two sisters who have a kind of unforgettable trip to the sea,
okay.
as you might imagine. Anytime a book has secret in the cover, it will often have immediate appeal to children.
Oh, yes. Yes. Anybody that likes mysteries, right? Yeah, like that. And we did have a listener wrote in to say that her new favorite children's book is Herman the Mouse by Tammy Seebecker Brown. It's told in a fun-to-read rhyme and is about what Herman the Mouse does when he's caught in a scary situation and whether he gets out of trouble and home to Mama and Papa Mouse. Now, that's not a new one, though, right? That's been around a while, hasn't it, Katie?
I'm not familiar with that book.
No?
But it's new to the listener.
Okay.
She said it's
yes,
her new favorite
to her. Yeah.
children's
mm-hmm.
book.
Yeah, and she said it's good for newly independent readers. So what is a newly independent reader?
Well, when a child learns to read, anyone who's been around a child who is learning to read, it's a really, really exciting time for the child and for the adults in that child's life. The child reads aloud often. I remember my sister-in-law asking me when her daughter was at that phase, asked me, at what point do they start to read silently? And that's a really good question. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it from reading teachers, at the point children learn to read silently, they're starting to read for meaning instead of sound. When children are reading something aloud, just when they're first beginning to read, they're practicing the decoding part of
okay.
reading. And you probably had the experience of listening to a child read aloud that by the time he or she gets to the end of the sentence, they don't have any idea what they've read.
What they're saying, yeah.
Because they're so busy decoding mm-hmm, the text.
Mm-hmm.
But when a child is beginning to read independently, at least how I define it, is when they are starting to read for meaning, and they then begin to read silently. And those sorts of books usually are a bit shorter. They usually have very short episodic chapters. They can't have too many characters. If you think all of the work a child is doing when they're reading independently at the beginning, they need to practice and they need to have all sorts of things that help them, like a lot of white space on the page, for
mm-hmm.
example. And, you know, I don't mean to sound like I'm Kevin Hankus's PR representative, but he had a great book for children in this age group a few years ago called The Year of Billy Miller, which is most children begin to learn to read independently at the end of second grade or the beginning of third grade. And then, you know, if you think of the Beverly Cleary books,
yes.
which are very popular, those are popular for children who are independent readers, but they've got a little bit of experience reading. But sometimes when people talk about books for newly independent readers, they're talking about books like Cat in the Hat or Frog and Toad is a popular mm-hmm. series, or more recently, the Mo Willems books about Elephant and Piggy.
Oh, yes, those are
where
so popular.
They're just beginning to read independent, to sound out
mm-hmm.
and to actually be able to decode the words. Those are sometimes called beginning readers. And when they were first designed in the 1950s, they were actually designed, instead of looking like picture books, they look like little chapter books, and they have chapters so that children have that kind of rise in their self-esteem.
Like training wheels for books?
Well, it's a lot is, you know, children are really, as I said, they're really sensitive to type. They want to feel like they're accomplished.
Yes.
And one of the books I brought today, which is just out this year, is called Baby Monkey Private Eye by Brian Selznick and David Serlin. And this is a book, I have no idea really who the audience is for this book.
I like it.
It looks like a novel. Mm-hmm. It looks like a chapter book.
It does.
It's heavy.
Really, it's a big book.
And, but when you open it up and you see the type, the first, and I think you can read it from across the room.
Oh, I can. Yeah, it's like 150, 200.
Just one word.
Font, yeah,
yeah, it says wait. And then we find out about who is Baby Monkey. Mm-hmm. And Baby Monkey, this book is in chapters, but we learn that Baby Monkey is a private eye. And there are five chapters, and each chapter, Baby Monkey is solving a different mystery. And there's a really strong pattern, which is often important for early readers. So it repeats the same sort of thing with a few elements changed. Mm-hmm. So each it's kind of like a Philip Marlowe setup in his office. Very intricate, black and white,
beautiful
line drawings mm-hmm. that readers have to interpret and really look at. Someone knocks on the door of this detective's office and says something is missing, and then Baby Monkey goes through all of the things he must do to solve the case. And then the last person who visits, needing his services, her baby is missing, and it turns out to be Baby Monkey's mother.
Uh-huh.
Now, this book is, I think, a little over 100 pages long. Some people see this as a book for beginning readers. I think of it as a mystery novel for three-year-olds. I've shared it with children because I've been curious about who it's for. I've shared it with children of a lot of different ages mm-hmm. because I'm curious how they respond. And I found that children who are about 7 or 8 think it's a little too babyish, that you don't really see how he does his problem solving. But kids who are 3, 4, 5 really like it because it makes them feel like they're reading a big kid's book.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that. It's cute. It's really cute. It's really cute. Again, that was Baby Monkey Private Eye. So that would be a great gift.
It would. And especially, you know, I also think for maybe an older child who needs a little confidence.
Definitely. Well, before we go back to the phones, let's get some more of these names on your list for younger children.
Okay. Well, one of my favorite books of the year is a picture book by Emily Jenkins called All of a Kind Family Hanukkah. And those of you who are out there listening may remember a series of books from your own childhood called All of a Kind Family. It was a series, it was a novels about a family with 5 sisters living in Lower Manhattan at the beginning of the 20th century. And the books were really groundbreaking because they were about a Jewish family, and you just didn't really see Jewish kids in books much. Back then, you don't really see them a lot
now,
today.
Right? Yeah.
But there are the author Sydney Taylor. There's actually an award named after her for Jewish children's literature, and this book is a brand new one. It was not written by Sydney Taylor. It was written. She was sort of an inspiration. It has the same characters, the same 5 sisters and their parents living in Lower Manhattan. But it is a picture book illustrated really beautifully by Paul Ozelinski. And so very, very detailed illustrations. I would say it's very cozy. And it's about the family's preparations for Hanukkah from the point of view of the youngest daughter, who's 4, who's just a little bit too young to do the various preparations, to the point where she gets angry and has a tantrum.
Uh-oh.
And she finally gets out of that mood, and it turns out she's just the right age to light the first Hanukkah candle on the menorah.
Yeah, very sweet, very sweet. All right, well, let's get some more recommendations from some of our listeners. First on the line, we've got Lynn in Racine. Hi, Lynn.
Oh, good morning. We have so many wonderful authors and illustrators in Wisconsin, there is a new book out called Christmas in the Ward, WARD, meaning the Third Ward of Milwaukee, by Barbara Josey and illustrated by Renee Grafe.
Both are Wisconsin people.
Both are Wisconsinites.
Barbara Josey and Renee Grafe are both from Wisconsin.
Great. Well, thanks, Lynn. I appreciate that. So that's another neat one with a connection to Wisconsin. And then let's go to Cassandra in Green Bay. Hi, Cassandra.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. What book do you have for us?
Well, this is a book that my 5-year-old and 3-year-old, we just found this week, actually, read it for the first time. It's called Gazpacho for Nacho, and it's about a little, and it's rhyming, and the rhyming theme continues throughout the book, and it's so fun, and the colors are vibrant, and the story is so cute because this little boy will only eat gazpacho, a cold soup dish. So his mom wants to make it all the time, but she said, you know what, I'm going to teach you how to make it. So she takes them to the market, and they buy all of these ingredients. And it's really great because the ingredients are named in Spanish terms. So the kids are learning different terms in Spanish as well, but it's also teaching kids to be independent. They may love something, their favorite dish, and the mom is teaching how to make it. So our children really like that. They kind of brainstorm and think, what can I do on my own?
Great. Well, thank you, Cassandra. Have you heard of that one at all, Katie?
I haven't, but it sounds delicious.
It does sound delicious. Wonderful. Thanks. And then let's talk to Nikki in Milwaukee. Hi, Nikki. What book do you have to recommend?
Hi. It was one that I remember reading as a little girl. As I told someone, I'm 26 years old, and I was maybe about 3 or 4, maybe 5 when I read this book. It's by Deborah Guarino. Is Your Mama a Llama? And it's another repetitious book. That's why it stuck with me, and it was one that I definitely recommended. I actually just bought it for my nephew, because he's 4, starting to read. It's an easy book, but it just goes along with the baby llama, and he goes around asking his friends if their mom is a llama, and they'll reply back, you know, no, my mom is a cow. And he'll go to the next one and ask his friend, you know, is your mama a llama? And the friend will reply back, you know, with a different animal. And at the end of the story, the baby llama ends up finding its mama, who is a llama, and finding out that that's where he belongs.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks, Nikki.
And isn't it wonderful that that has stuck with you all these years? And Nikki has done one of the things, too, I always recommend to people, to choose a book you like to give to a child, because what you're doing is sharing your enthusiasm for reading and books with that child.
There is nothing like getting a book that you loved, giving it to a child, and having them love it too. It is such a special connection. I just love that when that happens. So great, great idea there, Nikki. And let's go on with your list here, Katie. We were talking about kindness, and you mentioned one of the books. What was the other one?
Well, there are two books I especially recommend, and one is Be Kind by Pat Zietlow Miller, the Madison author, mm-hmm. and it's about a little girl who other kids make fun of after she spills grape juice on her shirt, and then the little girl who's the narrator talks to her parents and begins to just sort of list all the ways you can be kind. And they're all simple things that children or anyone can do. The other one is a little different. It's called I Walk with Vanessa. And it's a completely wordless book.
Oh.
And it's one in which one child witnesses another child being bullied and then goes home and she stews about it and she begins to think about what she could do and decides to talk to a lot of her friends, and what they do is just walk with this little girl to school as a group that just keeps growing and growing. What I like about this book is that it really requires children to read the illustrations, and I think it will inspire a lot of conversation. They can come to their own conclusions about what's going on and what they might do.
Is that a good way to, when you go through a book like that with a child that doesn't have words, is it good to ask them then their interpretation of what's
going to happen?
Or
just ask them to tell you the story.
Tell you the story.
From reading mm-hmm. the pictures.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that would be fun too. Okay, so we covered those two, and we did Baby Monkey. So let's go on to the middle grade readers. What do you have for us there?
Well, a book that I'm really excited about this year is by Varian Johnson. It's called The Parker Inheritance, and it is a puzzle mystery. where these two children are solving a mystery in their town, and they have to put together pieces of a historical puzzle based on local history. And so they're seeking out clues both from oral history, talking to people, from doing actual research, and finding out about something that relates to a tennis match between a black team and a white team that happened back in, I think it was the 1950s, and led to some racial violence. And it's something that they just hadn't known about. But one thing that I really love about this book, in addition to just the really great plot and characters, is that it is an homage to another Wisconsin author named Ellen Raskin, who wrote The Westing Game. And Ellen grew up in Milwaukee. She attended UW-Madison. And The Westing Game is set in a mythical Sheboygan. That's what she pictures, where her grandparents live.
Okay.
A lot of children in Wisconsin read The Westing Game. It's celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. And we have a special connection to the book, the CCBC, because Ellen donated the manuscript for the book.
Oh.
So the 40th anniversary edition has some bonus material in the back that are from the material we have in our manuscript collection at CCBC.
Mm-hmm.
And the two children in the Parker Inheritance, this year's book, are both, they both love The Westing Game, and so they use it as sort of a guide for solving the puzzle, and they also talk about the book a lot. So I think a really nice gift would be to give a child the 40th anniversary edition of The Westing Game and the Parker Inheritance together.
What a great idea. Yeah. And what else do we have?
A really strange book that I just read, and I wasn't sure this was going to work. It's by Daniel Jose Older, and it's called The Dactyl, and that's D-A-C-T-Y-L, The Dactyl Hill Squad, set during the Civil War. And it features children who are free blacks living in New York City during the Civil War. And they are trying to rescue a group of people who've been orphans, who've been who are fugitives, who have been captured and are being taken back to slavery. Now, what makes this really unusual is that they coexist with dinosaurs.
Very unusual.
And so it is a historical fantasy. And when I picked up that dinosaurs in the Civil War, but, you know, somehow it worked for me. For children who like the very popular author Rick Riordan, who writes about Greek myth,
uh-huh,
this would be a great book to give to them.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds very interesting, even just looking at the pictures, I'm sure. Okay, and well, we're kind of getting a little close to our time here, Katie. Why don't you run through the for 14 and older group real quick, too?
Sure. One of the books I really love this year is by M.T. Anderson and Eugene Yelchin, and it's called The Assassination of Brangwane Spurge. And it is a novel about elves and gremlins, and they have completely opposing points of view. And one of the stories is told all in narrative text, and one is told in pictures. And the author and illustrator actually set out to write a book in which the narrative and the illustrations are at war with each other. So you are getting completely different perspectives. It really is a book ultimately that's about propaganda and how that shapes the way people think, mm-hmm, about the world. And then really unusual fantasy set in a parallel universe by Jesse Andrews. It's called Mun Mun, M-U-N-M-U-N, and it's a world in which someone's physical size is based on how much money they have.
Yeah.
So really poor people are as small as mice, and really wealthy people are huge, huge. But you can size up or size down. So it's also just a very funny book, but it's a book that has a lot of social satire in it as well.
Yeah, what a great premise. What a great premise. Okay. And I think we've got time for one more. And this was called Spooked, about the War of the Worlds. This sounds so interesting.
Yes, it's a nonfiction book. And a lot of children and teens do have a strong preference for nonfiction. So I would never hesitate to give a nonfiction book as a gift. The subtitle of it is How a Radio Broadcast and the War of the Worlds Sparked the 1938 Invasion of America. It gives the background. You get a little background about Orson Welles. Again, another Wisconsin connection.
Yeah, so much talent.
He was from Kenosha. And John Houseman, who worked with him. We learned that when they were working on this production for radio, they just didn't think it was going to be very good, and they were kind of writing it last minute. And then, sorry, I don't know that a lot of teens will know about this, but adults certainly will, what happened when people were listening to this radio broadcast and thought it was real and were completely fooled by it. And many people really, really freaked out about it. And so you get both the background of the production itself and then what was going on in the world, which they had really no idea while it was happening that they were having this impact. And then it also brings up, again, the issue of fake news, which is another theme we've seen a lot in books today.
Sure. Very relevant, this whole episode. So, and we didn't get a chance to go through every single one, but I will put the list with the author's name on the WPR website. So if you go to WPR.org/Larry and you go to this particular show, which should be up near the top, I will have the reference on there as soon as I can figure out how to do it. But we'll have it on there hopefully by the end of the day or tomorrow. So, Katie, thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you. It's really fun.
Good. We always enjoy having you come over, and maybe you can talk about summer reading soon. So
sure.
We'll do that. Up next, how to deal with kids who are picky eaters. Stay with us if you have that problem on the Ideas Network.